This is Vulnerability Matters from the Money Advice Trust. Hello, hello. Welcome back to Vulnerability Matters from the Money Advice Trust. I'm Chris Fitch. Today's episode marks something very special indeed. It's the first instalment in our new Vulnerability Voices series, which we've created with Three Hands Insight, an organisation that brings together businesses with people who have lived experience in order to build better services, experiences and outcomes. Now, across this new Vulnerability Voices series, we'll be hearing directly from customers about their lives, circumstances and interactions with essential services like ours. And today we begin with Anne and Robert, who explain to Michael Hilton from Three Hands Insight just how serious illness has reshaped their everyday lives, from paying the bills, keeping a home running, to those moments of customer service that always carry the opportunity to both help and improve a situation, but also sometimes to inadvertently hinder or hurt. I'll share more on what else is coming up in our new Vulnerability Voices series at the very end. But for now, over to Anne, Robert and Michael.
We are here today to understand the impacts that a serious illness can have on someone's life and what that means for their interactions with businesses. I'm very lucky to be joined by Anne and Robert, who are going to share some of their own lived experiences with us. Thank you both for being here with me. Robert, could you start us off by giving us an introduction to your circumstances?
Thank you. I'm a former occupation psychologist. I resigned from a very lucrative job to become an interior designer, went to the United States to get a degree there, was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease in 2015, would be in permanent care had I not had deep brain stimulation in 2016, which reduced my prospective income for retirement because I had to commute my pension to pay for it. And I haven't worked as an interior designer since. I have had some employment, but not as much as I would have liked, and so I get by with odd jobs and no regular income apart from my former company pension and my state pension.
Thank you, Robert. And I guess just in summary, what does Parkinson's mean for your day-to-day? What are some of the effects it has on I guess, your day-to-day life?
And the main effects are on my balance. I can't walk without a stick. I have a tendency to slur my words, so I speak more slowly. And I have to be careful in places where there are lots of people because if I get jostled, I can fall over more. I have a tremor which is permanent, even though the deep brain stimulation is to cancel that out. And it means that computer work, I have a mobile phone, but I often misdial or mispress.
We will come back to the point about, therefore, kind of engaging with online and the challenges about that in a moment. But before we do, Anne, let me give you an opportunity to introduce yourself.
Hi. I didn't start as a disabled person. I was a senior manager in the charity voluntary sector. I was one of the first chartered managers when chartering came about, and I loved my job. So when I started having difficulties with my right hand, at the time I was doing Taekwondo, and we thought that I just had a nerve strike because I was always playing with people of higher belts than me. And we thought that there was nothing. And then slowly but surely that became worse. And it was in 2004 that I finally saw a neurologist who said, actually, this is something neurological. and you need to cut down on your work and take things more easily, or else you're going to end up in a wheelchair in 5 years. So I'd been brilliant and paid into critical illness insurance for years and years and years. So I thought, well, I need to put my claim in. And they came back and said that because I hadn't reported to them that I'd had pins and needles, they wouldn't cover me for a neurological disorder. So they didn't pay anything. And I, as a result, couldn't stop working, and I carried on working at the pace that I was. So I wasn't in a wheelchair in 5 years. I was in a wheelchair in 18 months. And one morning I just woke up unable to move. So I went from being a regional manager for shelter, about 50,000 a year and two holidays and a house and a car, and to nothing, literally overnight. And it was an unanticipated change, and it was harder when I was told that all it would do would be to get worse.
Wow. And you mentioned that, we're jumping to a product here, but I think you mentioned that you thought you had that protection in place. You thought you did have insurance. And we don't need to go into the details, but I'm just interested in hearing a little bit more about that and what it happened, and I guess what the impact was on you as not having that product there that you thought was there to protect you.
Yeah, we thought we were safe, but I'd had the, because when you're working in the voluntary sector, you are a vulnerable employee, because funding is always precarious in the voluntary sector, and often the best hope you can get from a grant funding is 3 to 5 years. You don't usually get anything more. So we had in place redundancy insurance and critical illness insurance, so that if something were to happen, then I was the main earner out of the pair of us. And it meant that if anything was to happen, we would be able to get by, because of course we had the usual commitments that people had. We had a mortgage, we had a car, and it wasn't, we thought we were safe. And I think there's a degree of complacency that comes from that. So when I first left the neurologist, it was like, well, this is bad, but it will be okay, you know, because they'll cover the rest of the mortgage, and you know, all of that stuff will be. So we had felt safer, and then found out that we weren't, and ended up in free fall. And it ended up with, I actually had to apply for bankruptcy, because and we lost everything. We lost the house, we lost the car, and ended up in council accommodation. And that all happened in the space of 6 months.
Wow. Which at the same time as you were coming to terms with, you know,
At the same time as I was coming to terms with an illness. Dave, my husband, was a senior buyer at the time in the private sector. And I woke up one morning and I couldn't move, which happens sometimes. I could barely talk. And at the time, we didn't have a care package or anything in place. So he had to book time off work. So they gave him a formal warning for it.
You've both talked about it, exactly, this illness coming and that change in things, and the link to sort of your ability to earn income and changing that, your financial life there, very powerfully. What other ways, Robert, in terms of your interaction with businesses, where are there kind of good examples of businesses being supportive and helpful, or examples of the opposite? Yeah. What have you found since the diagnosis?
The best example of being looked after, and it was totally unexpected, was that my dentist, who is just well-mannered, courteous, looks after me without patronizing, helps me in and out of the seat, opens the door. It's a heavy swing door, and I could easily be jettisoned out onto the pavement, but it's courteous.
So there have been times where you have, to use the technical term, kind of disclosed your circumstances to a business, and you've sort of felt that it hasn't really led to the empathy, the support, the understanding that you'd expected to.
Yes, with the bank, for example, they keep pushing me to go online, and I can't manage that on my own, because every time I make a mistake, and I get locked out. But every time I phone up, I get asked. have you considered online banking? And it's very difficult to be polite when you're asked that for the hundredth time.
It must be incredibly frustrating, particularly when you have sort of taken the step of explaining your circumstances, then you'd expect that back. I can see, Anne, you're nodding along to this. I mean, you talked about the big picture, about the financial product just not being there in the big picture to support you when you needed it. But at the other end, in terms of that practical day-to-day, how do you find the sort of businesses are in what you need more practically?
I've had a similar experience with when you disclose and you say, actually, this is the problem now. I've been driving for a very, very long time. And I had licenses for bikes, buses, cars and lorries. So was a pretty competent, confident driver. My fully comp insurance was like £68 a year because I had a billion years in no claims. And when I was diagnosed with a neurological condition, I, of course, notified my insurance company because that's what you do. So they said, well, we won't be refusing your insurance, but my premium went to £1,100. So it wasn't, they weren't breaking the law and denying me cover, but they were certainly making it impossible for me to gain said cover. And fortunately, a friend of mine pointed me in the direction of Motability, who were just so fantastic in comparison. And they said, we can give you all sorts of ideas around things that can make driving easier for you and can actually, so we'll keep you on the road for that bit longer. And they were absolutely so kind and so knowledgeable that it was amazing, particularly after I'd come away from the AA thinking, well, how on earth do you get insurance? And if you do that and you disclose, you don't. They did that. You're just excluded from things because suddenly you're not a good risk anymore.
And it's not explicit exclusion. It's sort of exclusion by just making it unaffordable.
Absolutely, yes. By making it just impossible to access, and that was really difficult. And again, you're still coming through this free fall thing when you've. Yeah, you know, I thought I'd see a neurologist and he'd say, well, you need to take these pills and stand on your head for 3 minutes and, you know, and everything will be fine. I didn't expect him to say, oh, this is something quite serious and I'm afraid it's permanent and it's also degenerative. And that takes a little while to sink in that your life is going to be fundamentally changed. And then to have to deal with the whole exclusion and rejection from businesses with something that was completely out of my control.
We've covered a lot of ground. It's been really rich and a lot of different angles. I guess one last question for you both then. You know, we've got an audience of people listening from all kinds of different businesses. What's the number one thing you'd like those listening to take away, to have in mind, to do, to think about, in order of, you know, supporting people like you guys who have had an illness that's come in later in life and had a big impact on your life? What's the message to them?
Treat me as an individual and acknowledge my individual circumstances. I'm not a genetic product. My illness is idiosyncratic just because my income is less than I expected. Doesn't mean I don't have the resources to repay a loan. I could do it in a different way. Think about, for me with banking, I don't understand why everyone's expected to die in credit when they have a property. And I have no intention of dying in credit, but I don't want to be paying super interest rates for the privilege of living in debt. Treat me as an individual and review my circumstances accordingly.
Thank you, Robert. Anne?
The first thing I thought was, one size does not fit all. And you'll never replace a human being. And finally managing to talk to a human being who was willing to listen to the circumstances, then I finally got some understanding and there's some stuff put in place and it's a lot easier. But I spent 4 days fighting to get this. And if there was somebody who was actually able to be contacted more easily, a human being who I could actually talk to, who would then be able to respond to me as an individual, then that would be so much easier, because I can manage fairly independently, but only if people are going to give me a hand on the way. Yes. And I'm intelligent enough and honest enough to be able to say, this is something I can't do on my own. Can you please give me a hand? And if I'm asking for specifics like that, I'm usually asking for something realistic. I'm not going to ask for something stupid. And if it's possible to be given, then that would just take so much stress from my shoulders. It would make life so much easier.
And people that you do meet aren't able to override the system. They don't have the authority, or they don't believe they have the authority to override a standard system. And that's infuriating, because they might be managers, they might be senior managers, but they're hiding behind an anonymous systemic wall that lets them off innumerable hooks and gives them no real responsibility.
It's exactly what I got told by the human being he said, oh, I'm sorry, the system just won't let me do that. And that was it. The only way you can contact the fraud is by ringing this number. And there was no flexibility in the system. I know exactly what you mean. It's so frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, both of you. I mean, the amount that you've shared, the honesty, the way you've articulated that huge change that you've both encountered in your life, and in just the 20 minutes or so we've had here. Thank you for being here. Thanks for being so honest. And thanks for giving those listening a real thought about, you know, what works, what doesn't work, and what you and others in your position need. So thank you very much.
And that's it for today's very special episode of Vulnerability Matters. I really hope you enjoyed the Vulnerability Voices premiere. A huge thanks again to Anne and Robert for their openness, and to Michael Hilton and Three Hands Insight for guiding the conversation. And just a note that Three Hands haven't been paid for or sponsored this special series. We're just working together to try and provide a resource for everyone listening. If you found this useful, please do follow the podcast, download it, share it with a colleague. And you'll hear more in our Vulnerability Voices series later on, with episodes covering everything from income shocks to criminal convictions and from bereavement to addiction. But until next time, thanks for listening, thanks for everything you do, and thanks for remembering that vulnerability matters. Vulnerability Matters was produced by Mandy McGreevy and Phil King and brought to you by the Money Advice Trust.